Okay, we're going to go next to an interview that I did a little while back with author Charles Bock. He wrote a new book. His new book is called Beautiful Children. And it took more than 10 years, almost 11 years, for Bock to write this book about his native Las Vegas. He himself grew up in Las Vegas, and the book focuses around kids who are living on the street in Vegas, trials and tribulations of being a young person there. And he delves into a lot of Las Vegas that you don't ordinarily see. It's not the touristy Las Vegas, Allison. It's the unseen edges of this city.
Sounds great.
Where real people are living.
That sounds great, but no, sounds like the great, idea. Interesting yeah. subject matter for a book.
Real people living their lives, having the same kind of struggles that everybody else has, but in the backdrop of this kind of crazy place. And the book's getting a lot of buzz. It was in the New York Times Magazine profile, book reviews. And this is his life's work. He's pretty passionate about it. And so we sat down and talked to him about what it took to put this book together. Here's my interview with him. Thanks for being here.
Rachel, it's an absolute joy. Hello, everyone out there in NPR land.
Okay, I'm going to ask you the tough question first.
Anything.
You're 38 right
yeah,
now, right?
That's right.
Okay, that's not the hard question. You were then... If it took you 11 years, so you were like 27 when you started this endeavor?
I was really probably 26.
26.
I was between 26 and 27.
You kind of change a lot over those particular 11 years.
Yeah.
How did the book change as you were writing this? Over the course of 11 years, I imagine the book was kind of different things at different stages.
The first, that's a good question. The first draft was angry. It was an angry book written by someone trying to show everything he could do. And it was very self-conscious. It was very showy. And there wasn't a lot of probably love for the characters in there. Or what there was, there was a difference between what I thought there was and what was on the page. As I matured, I became a smarter person, a more sensitive person, a more thinking person. And the book helped me and kind of directed me in that. And the book also evolved. It evolved in terms of form and craft. And instead of someone trying to show what everything they could do, look at me, probably everything that I could do, I learned to do better. And I learned to do in service of this crazy story that I had.
Describe the story. I mean, as critics and on the back of the book, it says, you know, yeah. young urban kids.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah.
How do you describe this story?
Thank you for asking. 12-year-old boy, Newell Ewing, growing up in Las Vegas. He goes out on Saturday night with an older friend. He doesn't come home. It's written with a lot of hope. It's written with a lot of love. I think it's more of a love story to the people who kind of fall by the wayside. Is one way I've thought of it. And there's a lot of pretty good jokes in there, too.
There is that tension. It's a very sad story, but there are some moments of real humor in that. And I think this passage in particular illustrates this. If I could have you read it, this is a part of the book where the mother of the main character, her child is missing, and she's kind of reflecting on that. And I'll have you.
Absolutely. She was not able to drive past a schoolyard without breaking down, and she could not prevent herself from cruising schoolyards, from going by that comic book shop. The boy had never been to a Hooters, but he had known that men liked Hooters, and whenever Lorraine used to drive past, he had enjoyed chanting, "Hooters! Hooters!" Therefore, she could no longer turn right on Lindell.
That is such a funny and sad and poignant scene.
There's some dark material, but the truth is it doesn't start off necessarily that way. It starts off with tragedy, and we start off learning about people that hopefully we're going to care about. And we, as the book goes, you care more and more, and you meet more and more people who are maybe weirder and more on the fringes, and you start to learn about them and care more about them too.
I want to ask you about the character of Las Vegas in this book.
Yeah.
You write about a world. You grew up there.
Yes, till I was 18.
And you tell a story of not the Vegas that we might see if we go for a weekend of gambling in a show. This is real, quote-unquote, Las Vegas, right, where people live outside of the Strip.
Right.
And I'd like to have you read another passage here that illustrates that, if I could.
Here, the vibe is tangibly different from on the Strip. All the overblown pretenses and fantasies have been stripped away. Frequent player slot clubs provide senior citizens with rebates at area grocery stores. And pick the parlay football contests require a Nevada driver's license to enter. Money still flows through the casinos. There's still enough energy in the air to rival any big name joint. But out here, the energy is shaded with blue-collar pragmatism. Career dealers and waitresses occupy untold seats around blackjack tables. Log rolling is constant, as is the business of watching and washing backs. You never know. The guy you broke in dealing poker with 10 years ago could show up as a pit boss. The husband of your former secretary might end up a head waiter.
What do you want readers to know about Las Vegas after they read this book? What are you trying? What role is that character, Las Vegas, in this book for you?
Las Vegas is about taking the flash of the American dream and the bigger, faster, glitzier now part of it. I focused on that. And as one part of Las Vegas, I also tried to focus on the idea that there's people there who live and work and love and hope. I think that A has an effect on B, whether it's subconscious or conscious. So it's a complex organism.
I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about kids who live on the street and this element of kids who run away. And, I mean, you spent 11 years on this, and it's your first book. Of all the things in the world that you could focus on, why was that an appealing narrative? Why did you feel compelled to tell the story of these kids?
Well, simply, I could have been that kid. And there's a writer who I love, William Volman, says that one of his missions is to write beautiful words and put them in beautiful sentences and create great paragraphs and great stories about the people that most of us cross the street to avoid. I've lived in a lot of places where there's been a large runaway culture. I've always, at a certain point writing-wise, I realized it wasn't a large leap from the memories of me not wanting to be in my body to, well, what would happen if I did disappear? And then to create a narrative, and then to think, well, what would happen to the parents of that kid, that fictional child, if he did disappear? And it took me down some roads towards an idea of lost promise and towards the reality that there are, you know, there are hurt people out there, young men and women, who have no recourse. And the recourse they choose most of the time does not end well. And that seemed, it's a great subject. It captivated me. A writer has to write something that they sit down with and are interested in every day of their life. This killed me, and I had to get it right.
Did you write this purely from anecdotal experience, personal experience, or did you have to go out and do some research? Did you get on the streets and talk to people?
I did lots of research. I also, you know, I would talk to lots of street kids. I never had any money while I was writing this book, but I had more than those kids. And so I would, I always give whatever I have to whoever is on the streets anyways. I would engage a lot of people in conversation. I studied police reports. I read clinical studies. I also went out of my way to make sure that my characters were fictional creations and that I did not exploit or put any real life stories into the book. It is fiction, but fiction is the lie well told, and hopefully I did justice to the subject.
You were not writing this book part time for 11 years, right? This was a full time gig. How did you feed yourself, and how did you psychologically sustain yourself over what I imagine was a really difficult period of time to be working on the same thing?
I didn't have a lot of great jobs. I was a third shift legal proofreader. I did office work for people where a friend might say, hey, we need someone in this office, and then I would have a month or 2 weeks or whatever somewhere. I taught fiction workshops. I also, a friend of mine named Mike Wise gave me a tremendous break, and I was able to help him I was a ghost editor on a celebrity biography for Shaquille O'Neal, a celebrity autobiography. Mike was also one of those friends who would have a big party, and at the end of it, he would give me all the leftover chicken wraps. And so then I would have 4 days of food.
But did it get annoying when you would show up and see your friends and they'd be like, so Charles, how's that book coming?
Yeah, it is annoying. It is annoying. And it was probably annoying to J.D. Salinger when it took him 16 years to write Catcher in the Rye. And it was probably annoying to Joseph Heller, who wrote Catch 22 and published it at 38. Art and fiction especially, and big books, you know, it takes a while. And I didn't, you know, you don't strap on knowing how long it's going to take. I was halfway in, and I realized how deeply over my head I was. And I was I could either give it up and go for the shore and start over and then be 30, let's say 33 with nothing. Or I could figure this out. I always had belief that there was a way through. And I always believed that if I read enough and studied enough and listened to the story, I would end up with a book that did not read like it took 10 years, but read like it always existed. And I don't know if that happened, but I know I did the best I could. Yeah. And on the next one, I hope it doesn't take 10 years, but I'm going to do the best I can on the next one, too.
These are finally... Last question. These are characters, though, that have – they were born from you. These are creations.
Completely.
You have lived with them for
completely.
A decade.
For a decade.
Are you sad? Is there loss in your life now that they live in books on the shelves?
It's weird to see the books on the shelves. It's weird to have – it's a bizarre experience. It's very gratifying. And it's weird to not have these characters as part of my head and my conversation. And they played such a big part of my emotional life for such a long time that it's now weird to try and move beyond them and do new work. And at the same time, it's wonderful, and life does move forward. And you know, and thank goodness it worked out this way, right? And I hope that they're going to live for a long time with a lot of people and maybe do some good. So that's pretty excellent. That's a nice hope to have.
Charles Bach is the author of a new book, Beautiful Children. It's a bird, it's a plane, it's a satellite. I could probably figure out the bird and plane thing. The satellite, not so much. Which is why we're going to talk to a guy who's sort of the bigwig in satellite spotters. It's part of our extreme hobby series. He's got his eyes on the skies, and we'll talk to him about why he does it and what he's seen. This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.